Orioles pitchers and catchers have reported they are working out on the fields at Sarasota. And let's head to Sarasota now. Our friend Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us now courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Jacob, thank you as always for joining us. I want to start with something we're going to talk about more in depth next segment, and that's Adley Rutschman. A lot of people felt like he wasn't in the greatest shape in the world last year, and the second half of the season was not good for him. How does he look? You're there. Does he look like he's in the best shape of his life?
Yeah, those cliche questions always get me.
Yes.
If Adley Rutschman showed up to spring training looking as jacked as Jackson Holliday is, and all of the really smart baseball people who make projections like Zips and Steamer, and they saw that that Adley Rutschman came to spring training jacked, they would not change their projections for him one iota. And if a few people tweeted that Adley Rutschman looks a little chubby, those projections wouldn't change either. It's important in the offseason to get in shape and to really work hard. From what I've seen, Adley Rutschman looks in perfectly good shape. That is, of all of my concerns and things that I am tracking with Adley Rutschman this spring and this season, the percent of his body fat is very low on that list. His swing path, mm-hmm. his health, his how he looks, and if he's willing to recognize that he wasn't the type of defensive catcher last season that he should be, and maybe some honesty mentally about the struggles that he went through last year and how he's planning to overcome that this season. Mm-hmm. All of those things matter much more to me than any of this stuff about his how in shape he may or may not be.
Mike Elias continued his yearly tradition of delivering injury updates on the first day of spring training yesterday, Jacob, and nothing too crazy, but we feared that Jorge Mateo would miss some time. He will not be ready for opening day. How big of a loss is that for this club, and what are the ripple effects in terms of the 26-man roster, considering that he'll start the year on the IL?
Well, the biggest impact with the roster is it looks quite likely that they're going to keep 5 outfielders instead of 4. If Mateo were healthy and is on the 26-man roster, that means you would more than likely have 4 traditional outfielders with Mateo able to play there as well. So that makes it so that the roster's predefined. Honestly, there aren't too many competitions so long as everybody stays healthy. It looks like Heston Kerstad is a near shoo-in for a spot from the way that I see it and what Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde said yesterday. And then you're not going to pay Ramon Laureano $4 or $5 million dollars to not make the team. And so, especially given his track record. So that's what it means. How much is this team going to miss him? If Jorge Mateo, for whatever reason, doesn't end up playing at all for this team, I think that will be felt. His versatility, his speed are things that can really help a team. He can really give you a jolt for a couple weeks there. We've seen it before, and it comes out of nowhere, and it can really give a team a boost. But honestly, with the depth of this roster, I don't think it's that much of a concern if he's going to miss the first few weeks of the season. And frankly, it might be something where it wouldn't surprise me if behind the scenes Jorge Mateo feels as if on opening day he's ready, but the team is slow playing it to make sure he's healthy, and because they have the depth, so why not?
We kicked around the bullpen a little bit this week and sort of, you know, our take on it. And there seemed to be a lot of people bullish on it. And certainly it looks better than it did a year ago. But a lot of that hinges on Batista. And how certain are you that they have mitigated against the sort of bot-like worst case scenario situations where Batista's never really in the first, say, couple months of the season, at least, he's not pitching consecutive days and he's never giving you more than 3 outs. And a lot of guys get pushed up into roles that maybe they're not exactly ideal in because the closer's not really the closer in the first half of the year. Do you think they've mitigated against those sort of downside probabilities enough?
Yeah, Jason, I'll go one step further. You said it sort of hinges on Bautista being 2023 Felix. I think it totally hinges on that, right? So, like, if you take him out of this equation, this is an at best middle-of-the-pack bullpen mm-hmm. and more than likely a bottom 10 bullpen, right?
Yeah.
If you include, instead on the other end, if 2023 Felix shows up, then this is a top 8 bullpen, right? That's how important he is. That's how good he is. And that's how much they're relying on him. Now, you could say that might be too much. You're relying too much on a guy that coming off Tommy John who has these long levers and you don't know how he's going to come back and what his command's going to look like and all of that. And I would say that that's fair. I would say that the Kittredge signing does help a good bit. He's not somebody that's going to slot in as a dominant ninth inning guy. And so that's still going to be a question mark if Felix either isn't ready for opening day or isn't himself. But that is a spot. So let's say they go through the first half of the season and Felix is solid, but not himself. But this team's still in position to make the playoffs, which a mediocre bullpen is not going to kill you in the first half of the season, right. Most likely. Then they can go at the deadline and really address that. Now, should they have maybe done that this offseason? Sure. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, I saw Felix throw today. It doesn't mean anything because it's a bullpen in February, but he looks pretty good to me.
We're talking with Jacob Calvin-Meyer. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Jacob, you mentioned Jackson Holliday jacked. How much does, obviously he's in great shape, but what are your, and we've talked about this before, but your expectations for him this season are?
My expectations for him are that he's going to open the season as a league average player, and he's going to end it as a really good player. He's going to begin the season as a slightly below average defensive second baseman, and he's going to end it as a slightly above-average defensive second baseman. I'm probably more bullish on Holliday than most people. And the fact that he is weighing 200 pounds now, that he looks as in shape as ever, and he looks that he looks ripped, is great. It will help him maybe poke a few more doubles, hit some more homers over the fence. That's all great. But it might also help him sustain for a full season. If he is in the major leagues the whole year and this team makes a run in the playoffs, you're talking about 20 spring training games, 150-some regular mm-hmm. season games, plus, if they do some damage, 10, 15 playoff games. That's far more than he's ever played in a single season. And it's tough to maintain your off-season gains throughout the year. And the fact that he's he's bulked up a little bit, and it seems like he's really prepared for not just a long season, but a long career. And so I don't think it's out of the question to say that by the end of the season, Jackson Holliday is going to be a key part of a team that's hoping to make a playoff run.
Jacob, were you surprised yesterday when Mike Elias said that Kobe Mayo was going to be playing mainly third base spring training?
I honestly don't know anymore. I don't want that to come. I can't say that I'm surprised about anything that they're doing with Cody Mayo defensively. Here's the challenge. The challenge is that he isn't going to really see much time at first base unless there is an injury. Whereas I guess there's a scenario where if he's playing great in AAA and Jackson struggles again, then you can push Westberg to second and then bring up Mayo and put him at third. But there's also the potential of somebody gets traded at the first baseman, and then that opens up a hole. My guess is that I think what Mike meant more so by that comment is that there's going to be a lot of guys rotating in and out of first base. Some of those are legitimate options and some of them aren't. That's a position where we see Adley Rutschman play first base every spring, right? This isn't the year that we're going to see him actually play there in a big league game. And so where Kobe Mayo fits in defensively in the short term might be different than where he fits in the long term, if that makes sense.
Are you confident, or how confident are you that the Baltimore Orioles will finish ahead or won't finish behind the Yankees and Red Sox? In other words, how
do you think they'll finish
realistic
third?
Do you think it is that they are now the third best team in this division?
Is it possible that they are Let's be honest. Is it possible that they're the fourth best team in this division? I think that that's in the range of outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
This division is going to be closer than it was in 2023 when I believe every team finished 500 or better. That's actually what projection systems like Zips are forecasting, is that all five of these teams finish above 500. I think we could see a really small spread between first and last in this division. I'll say this. I do think three teams out of the AL East are going to make the playoffs. And so is it possible that they finish third behind New York and Boston? Yes. Is it also possible that if they do that, that they still make the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Yes. If I were projecting right now, I would not have them finishing third. I'm probably a little bit more bullish on this team this year than even I, as a pessimist, feel comfortable with. Last year I projected them to win 88 games. I kind of saw the regression coming, and that can come in many forms. I think we're going to see a little bit of a bounce back to the mean with a lot of these guys and the fact that they cannot suffer as bad injury luck as they did last year. But you're right, which is that the challenge for them in making the playoffs is the fact that this division is going to be really good.
Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. Jacob, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy that warm weather.
It's great here, guys. I can tell you more about it if you want to hear it.
We'll take your word
for
it.
Maybe next week when we're getting 6 to 8 inches of snow, supposedly. So,
thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hey, coming up next, we're going to get back to Adley Rutschman, Totally Radley. And what are our expectations for Adley Rutschman this season? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Yeah, he looks great. You know, spent a lot of time this offseason talking with him, totally bought into his offseason plan, not only offensively but defensively. He looks really good right now. He's as driven as he's ever been, and I expect him to have a good camp.
That's Brandon Hyde talking
What's
about Adley Rutschman.
Yeah. I guess they're building that $21 million player development center. Yeah. I guess that's what that is.
Underway. Got some noise going on there. They got some
I'm
stuff going
to
on.
I'm going put up with it for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was Hyder talking about Adley Rutschman, and we just
maybe
talked
by the time that's built, they'll have turned old Rodgers back into a Major League Baseball player. Maybe they can help put Humpty Dumpty back together.
He's hit 93 on the gun.
Wonder
there,
how many
Jason.
Home runs Connor Norby will hit for the Marlins by that time.
Well, maybe.
I wonder.
We'll see how many Jackson Holliday hits.
Yeah,
We will. I feel pretty good about Jackson Holliday. I'm in the Jacob Calvin-Meyer camp on him. But alas, let's get to Adley Rutschman. Jacob didn't care about what he looks like.
Yeah.
He cares about how he plays. What are your expectations for him?
I hope he can get back on a Matt Wieters track. I think Matt Wieters will be the comp for him. Matt Wieters was the comp for him prior to Adley falling off a cliff, really from about June on. I mean, they left that series at the Bronx on top of the world. Adley started the ensuing Astros series shot out of a cannon, and then things started to fall apart from there. Can he get back on that Wieters track? We'll see. I mean, I'd like to say Wieters with more on base, but I'm not setting the bar super high. He needs to be able to hit when he catches. So that's what I need. That's what needs to happen. There can't be a massive fall off from DH Adley to catcher Adley. And he needs to be able to catch more games than he has in the past, because I think Sanchez is not going to be a good fit for this pitching staff. I don't think guys are going to like throwing to Sanchez. I think there's going to be a lot of things going on there that are less than optimal. And when your 1-1 face of the franchise catcher was drafted that high in part because he's supposed to be so amazing with pitchers and so great behind the dish and making everybody better, and you got a journeyman slugger as the backup who wasn't good in his prime defensively and now clearly isn't even in his prime, then the 1-1 better be really good. He needs to be fundamentally sound. He needs to be available and accountable as a leader and as a catcher and as a game caller and as a framer and as a blocker. And the throwing is what it is. I don't have very high expectations for him throwing people out. He needs to get back to getting on base 37% of the time. He needs to cut down on the chase and the swing and miss. You know, I think at the end of the day, the power numbers will probably be there. He'll have his around 20 home runs. Can he have 25, 30 doubles to go with it? But consistency of approach at a bare minimum needs to be there. Not the consistently horrific approach we saw the final four months, but the approach that led him to be the 1-1, that got him to the majors, and that served him very well his first couple of years.
Yeah, the approach has to be better. He has to get back to being the Adley Rutschman that we saw for the first 1.5, 2 years of his career, not the second half. And that's the issue of the second half, where there is nothing that you could hang your hat on if you're Adley Rutschman in the second half of last season. Maybe blocks above that, but even that. And defensively, that's the thing that's almost most troubling for me, because what was everybody saying heading into that draft? He's already MLB caliber behind the plate, and we've seen his defense dip each season. And this year, there has to be an uptick, because you're not getting that out of Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez better not be catching as often as James McCann was. So Adley has to be better there.
Here's where I am. 2023. 20 homers, 80 RBIs, 92 walks, .277 batting average, .374 on base. That's the bar. I want 2023 Adley Rutschman. Give me that. I'll be happy.
Yeah, I think everybody would sign up for that. But even then, like, he needs to be able to hit the ball hard and drive in runs when he's wearing the equipment too.
Well, we all expect him to catch more, right?
I just think with this lineup, with no Santander now, and with so many guys who clearly they only want facing certain types of pitchers at certain times, and being so platoon heavy, your aircraft carriers, the guys you want in the lineup every day, have to be able to do it. And this guy in particular has got to be able to do it when he's playing defense as well, because I'm just telling you, Sanchez isn't even McCann behind the plate. He's got a bigger arm. He will throw more people out when that thing's accurate. He will throw out more people at second, and not a lot of people are going to take third on him like they did McCann and Adley, especially Adley. But there can't be a crutch. No. He's got to deliver, and he's got to deliver when he catches.
Maybe more wall sets during the regular season. Hey, coming up next, Terps' big win at Nebraska last night. We recap and look ahead. Is this a team that can make a deep run into March? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
83-75 with 10 seconds to go, and Bryce Williams brings it up in the backcourt for Nebraska. He'll launch an NBA type three. That's no good. The follow is no good. And the rebound by Julian Reese. And the Terps have come to Lincoln, Nebraska, and knocked off the Huskers tonight. 83-75 is the final.
The funny thing about it is the second time you play them, you understand their defense so much more. The first time we played them, we kept trying to throw it in the post. And that's really what Fred's defense is designed to do, is it lets you throw it in the post, but then take it away. And they do such a good job. I think our guys had a better feel for what we had to do, and were able to execute it.
Heard the final call. Johnny Holiday, Chris Nockey on the call. Game heard right here on 105.7 The Fan. And then, of course, you heard from Coach Kevin Willard. After the game, Terps go to Nebraska and win 83-75. And wild enough, they beat Nebraska here, and Juju and Derek Queen combined for 11 points. Last night, 37 points. And Derek Queen, another 20-10-plus game.
Yeah, look, I was really impressed with the way they handled early success, running up the 11-point lead in the second half, and then the adversity that followed, and stemming that bleeding and keeping it from getting to be more than, you know, really a two-possession game, and never relinquishing the lead, and never really getting rattled. Other guys are going to make shots too. Officials are going to make some weird calls. But it wasn't – I didn't feel like Maryland was handing the ball back to them. And I talked a lot about Jacoby Gillespie this week and how I thought he was going to have to be one of the dominant players on the court for them to win. And I thought he might score a little more. But what he did, I thought expertly, was just harness every critical game situation and be super comfortable with the ball in his hands, with his back to a defender, receiving, dribbling, just controlling the pace and tempo of that basketball game and making sure that they were in position to have quality possessions to keep building that lead up. Wasn't forcing things himself through a shot, wasn't forcing passes. I just felt like he was in total control of that situation. And they were the better team. They hustled. They weren't intimidated, even though that crowd and the Nebraska bigs, I think, wanted to intimidate them. It was just a very mature outing, but I really felt like Jacoby Gillespie in the final 10 minutes of that game was the perfect quarterback for what they needed and helped keep them staying emotionally high, but not getting carried away and not getting hyper and not getting manic and not wanting to sprint and run so much that they end up turning the ball over.
I thought the passing as a whole last night was fantastic. And that starts with Jacoby Gillespie with the 7 assists. But I can think of the one play, Julian Reese finds a wide open Gillespie for a 3 in that game. Derek Queens taking it up in a fast break, dribbles behind the back, finds Selvin Miguel right underneath the basket. I just thought the passing last night was so crisp. They had 15 assists. That was their most assists in a game since Illinois.
I'm curious. Bellway Ben, what did you think of the performance last night?
I was super pleased. That was the – and I've been very excited. You guys know that. I've talked about how high I'm on this Terps team. But last night, like, it was a lot of excitement throughout the game. When Reese got the technical, I slammed my wall. Like, I was very into the game just because I felt like it was a make-or-break game for them. Are they going to be the 8-9, 7-10 game, which it's fun to get back into the tournament, but it's not very good? Or are they going to win this, jump into probably the 6th seed now, and with some more wins build up? I was pleased with how they played. Nebraska, and there was a local writer, like all these Nebraska people are trying to push this as this Terps team came in, was cocky and stuff. It was pretty clear Nebraska was going to try to get physical. Andrew Morgan dominated the Terps the last time they played. I was talking about it before. He hadn't done much since. But Yuke Tinsel's out. And the Terps, Derek Queen, who's a freshman, Julian Reese, who, you know, has kind of been a role model for him, those two dominated there. They were talking to the crowd, waving bye to him. It was awesome to see the team. And, like, people can call it cocky or whatever. They were confident. They know how good they are. And they need that because, like, go last year. Watch them play last year. You have everybody moping, putting their head down because how bad they are. This team is confident, and they're going to need that in March.
By the way, quiet as it's kept, they've won 3 of the last 4 on the road, which has been a bugaboo for them since Turgeon. Like, they've had trouble winning road games, especially in conference.
6 of 7, right? They've won 6 of their last 7 games.
6 overall, but I mean road games.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 of 4 on the road. And the one loss was the Ohio State game.
Yeah. I just think the last, after that final TV timeout, the under 4 timeout, that stretch with 3.5 minutes to go just has shown how far this team has come, because they're taking Nebraska's best shot. They're not getting stops, but they're continuing to score to keep it a 4-point game. And then they were able to get that stop and put the game away.
They might lose that game a month ago.
It's interesting to me, too, because, like, again, I was actually, and I like to see them run, but I was worried that they were going to try to force that a little too much because they were scoring the ball so well. They shot almost 70% from the field in the second half. But you look at the number of possessions, and what were they doing? They were smart. They're on the road with the lead. They were bleeding a lot of clock, and that's where I go back to Gillespie. If you're that efficient, where you're making 70% of your shots, you're not shooting a ton because you're getting to the line a fair amount, and you're taking high percentage shots, and you're milking the clock at the same time, I got to go back to the point guard and give him a lot of credit for that. And look, we're now talking about a Maryland team that has the highest scoring starting 5 in the nation. 69 points a game.
Bone. From Bone to Ben.
Nice.
Also, I want to shout this out. Kevin Kugler and Sean Morris. Bryce Williams and Connor Cision, you would have thought were on their deathbed. I think the Big Ten officials, the Big Ten commentators, everybody in the Big Ten wants to see the Terps lose. They had to tell us 50 times that these dudes were sick and that they were playing through a lot, and Bryce Williams still gets the 20 points playing with it. I don't really care about it. The Terps deserve more of a shout-out, and they didn't get it, but it's not a surprise in the Big Ten.
It's Nebraska blue blood, Jason?
they're not a blue blood, but they're like... They're like a light blue blood.
They're a big blue blood.
They're like a sky blue blood.
They're far more respected.
They're closer
than
to a blue blood than us.
I'm poking fun with Jason.
Yeah. Terps back in action Sunday.
Osborne's still like the ghost
Tom?
Of Dr. Is he still?
I think he's deceased.
But I mean, that carries a lot of weight.
Dr. Tom. You know what his doctorate was in, Bone? Sideline management. I'm kidding. But Maryland, Sunday, 5 o'clock, Iowa. Pregame coverage at 4. Hoping the Xfinity Center is packed for that one. We will come back, get the text of the day, and most importantly, we're going to get you ready for Infinity Sports Radio at 6 right here on 105.7 The Fan. Want to begin with an apology.
Yeah,
we were premature in our announcing the passing of Tom Osborne, who is still very much alive at the age of 87.
And all the more reason why he's probably more influential than ever, and good luck getting calls in Nebraska.
Yeah.
It's not the first or last time.
He's earned
time.
It, though. He's earned it.
Eddie Van Halen, I made the mistake.
Yep. You did.
What do you know about Tom Osborne there, Bum?
He's the Nebraska coach.
Ah, thank you. We literally just covered that last segment. I mean, anything you know before last segment.
He's the Nebraska coach.
He did really,
coach,
he did really
for
well.
Forever.
Yep. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's good stuff, Bone.
Thank you.
Did he win a national championship at Nebraska?
Yes.
There you go, Bone. Very nice. He won two.
He's got some great memories down at the...
When was their last one?
Three.
They beat Miami in Miami, right? In the...
Well, that famous game.
In the Orange Bowl.
They lost that game. That was the Turner Gill.
Okay.
They lost that game.
They beat them with Tommy Frazier, didn't they?
That was Florida. They beat Florida.
Florida. Gotcha.
They had Lawrence Phillips.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they won national championships 94, 95, 97. That was that run. Because forever, they would always lose the big games. And they used to be in the same conference with Oklahoma, Bones.
Yes.
It's a history lesson.
Big 12.
And Oklahoma used to beat them almost every year.
Yeah.
And Barry Switzer.
And Lawrence Phillips, people wanted the Ravens to
beat
him. See? Yeah, and then they went Jonathan Ogden.
Well, yes, Ozzie advocated for Ogden.
Yes.
Art Modell, rest in peace, wanted Lawrence Phillips because he wanted somebody
to sell.
Yeah. He couldn't sell a tackle.
Turned out he could not have sold.
Oh, man. Lawrence Phillips.
Bad news.
That would have been bad. Rest in peace, Lawrence Phillips, by the way.
Yes.
He is paid.
He is
deceased.
Definitely gone.
I think he died in prison. Let's get the text of the day.
Text today is sponsored by Oarsman Automotive. Driven by OarsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Oarsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OarsmanCars.com. Text of the day comes from Jorge in Edgewater, who says, what was most impressive about Juju's push pass to Queen underneath the rim that led to Queen's free throws is that Juju had the wherewithal to take some heat off of the touch pass and make it an easier catch and layup attempt for Queen. High basketball IQ right there. Love watching the big fella's passing game down low.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite sequences of the game. And he had the body control to stay in bounds, to harness that ball, sort of almost like a high-lie stick wicket, right? Like, collect it and then just one-hand it right there.
The other part of it, talk about Queen and his awareness. He knew the big fella was coming at him, gave him the big pump fake, got the foul.
Get them off their feet.
Yeah, it is always great to watch high IQ basketball. And we're getting more of that from them.
Not that long ago, there was not much high IQ basketball.
Especially on the road and in close and late situations. So they look really, really excited about the rest of this month, obviously, but what they can do next month. As good a top five. They probably have a top five starting five in college basketball.
So what is the ceiling for them? Is it Elite Eight? Is it you get to, as Andy Katz said earlier, NC State got the Final Four.
Yeah.
You get the right matchups and the sky's the limit.
At this point, it would be a disappointment if they don't get to the second weekend. And then it's matchups, as you always say, Ken. I mean, they got a high ceiling. As long as none of these five get into foul trouble. Yeah.
I think is a little different than the luck of the baseball gods.
Yes, baseball gods.
But I think this is different because this is literally humans coming up with a
human nature
tournament.
No, human nature, Bone.
Versus,
by the way,
baseball gods.
Can they get through a whole NCAA tournament without Juju having one of those foul trouble games?
Well, or could they win with it, with him only having one?
Yeah. Well, if he has one, it better be one of the first two games.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then you can get by it. Second weekend, that makes things a little bit tougher.
Unless you're facing a 13 seed who's done their part for wrecking people out and making your road a little easier.
Wrecking people out. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone, speaking of that. Hey, hope everybody has a fantastic Valentine's Day weekend.
I hope whoever you're with realizes what a con this is and doesn't subscribe to corporate BS like
Happy
fake holidays.
There he is, the ultimate optimist. Yeah.
Just keep it real.
Yeah. Margie, I do love you.
I married someone who's smart enough to know this is all a shill.
Well, she does put up with you, so she's
and she knows this is a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can still enjoy it. You can do something for 65 days.
That's exactly
right.
It, Bone. Yeah.
You bring it as Bone.
That's exactly it, Bone. Yes. You got me figured out. You make every day.
We're off
the best day it could be. Then you don't get sucked into this vortex of ridiculousness.
We're off on Monday for President's Day, so we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Infinity Sports Radio coming up next. Have yourself a great weekend.